Welcome to the last tape in this conference for single-parent families. Scott and Joanne want this last session in particular to provide hope and encouragement to you. We hope you discover that you're already doing some things well as you listen to this tape. Let's join Scott as he talks about the importance of having fun with your kids.
Just think about all the hats you wear as a parent. Sometimes it's the nurse's hat. Sometimes it's the counselor's hat. Other times it's the policeman's hat. You know, you wear all these different kinds of hats, and you have to say yes and no to your children a lot. Sometimes when you have to say no to them, or you're correcting them, or disciplining them a lot, it almost sets up like an oppositional relationship that puts tension on the relationship in your family. In order to overcome that, you need to learn how to play together. There are times we have to work at the family to make it come together and to work to get the jobs done of family life, teaching children how to live within limits, how to follow instructions, how to be corrected. All of that's important, but we also want to come alongside and play and enjoy that. Sometimes it means we work hard for a while and then we play. But we're doing both of those things in order to develop a sense of family unity. So you're going to want to develop a fun family night, or you're going to talk about pleasant memories of a vacation you had, or plan a special time together, looking for ways to enhance unity together in your relationships, in your unit, your family unit.
I'm going to develop a sense of give and take in your family. It's not always just one person doing all the giving and another person do all the taking. But in relationships that are healthy and successful, there's give and take. And that, of course, is true in a single parent family, that mom can't always be doing all the giving, but there's give and take that's fostered in that family. So children need to learn to do both. Sometimes they need to lead. Sometimes they need to follow. We want to develop that in our kids. I think often as single parents, we may fall into the trap of always letting the kids lead because it's easier. But we want to, especially if there's only one child, you know, we'll just let them have it, you know, whatever they want for dinner. But really, kids need to learn to give and take, and that's an important aspect. So we teach them that by leading and following.
One of the items on your list of success principles for a family is to distribute power. The idea there is that we're working together. Sometimes we're leading, sometimes we're following. Now, as we're working together with single-parent families, sometimes we'll suggest to develop this in your family, maybe it'd be helpful for you to play the You Be the Leader game. The You Be the Leader game has three parts. One part is where you choose an activity that you can work on together to accomplish. That activity is going to be something like buying groceries, you know, finding all the groceries and then buying them, cleaning out a closet, washing the car, raking the leaves, a job that needs to be done. You're going to choose the activity, and then you're going to choose someone to be the leader. Sometimes that someone is going to be mom or dad. Sometimes that someone is going to be one of the children. In fact, it's good to play this game several times and rotate the leader so that each person gets to be the leader. That's the first part of the game. The second part of the game is you play it, and you let the person who's designated to be the leader lead. Now, that can be difficult when you've got a 6-year-old leading or a 15-year-old leading. Sometimes it can be kind of irritating or difficult at times, but that's part of the game. And so you want to be a follower, a wise follower, knowing how to respond. Now, that means that sometimes, I mean, what we encourage parents to do is kind of make this fun by pretending to argue with your leader a little bit and say, oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't very honoring. Or whining and complaining when at a point and saying, oh, yeah, I shouldn't be doing that. Just to draw out the issues a little bit. Adding those kinds of things makes this game fun. There's two parts. Part number one is to identify the leader in the activity, and part number two is to start working on that game.
You know, I just want to share an observation about single parents. Sometimes they let the children lead more than you normally would because it just makes things run a little more smoothly. It relieves some of the conflict that might be happening. And the one parent is just more likely to just let the children have their way if there's not two parents that are trying to both lead. And so single parents can let the child lead a little more often than maybe is helpful and develop selfish children because they're used to leading all the time. They get what they want for dinner all the time, or they get to do it their way because, you know, mom has been at work all day and she's tired and she would just as soon let them take the lead anyway. And sometimes single parents can fall into that trap of always letting the children lead and not teaching them to follow as well. In fact, sometimes a single parent may even have the attitude that the child has had to sacrifice so much already. They've lost a parent, or life is not the way I would like it for them. And so the rationale here is that, well, I'm going to let the child lead because at least we can let them have that. It may say something like this. Because Caitlin has lost her dad, I don't want to say no to her unless it's absolutely necessary. I just want her to be happy. I can't make her dad come back, but at least I can give her what she asks for. There's a mistake in thinking there, though, because really what the mixing up here is that the reality of loss, it's reality, but it's not punishment. Loss and punishment are two different things. And so the parent is always trying to make up for that. You're going to end up with selfish children who are always taking, always taking. And no matter what injustices or difficulties our children have to live with, they still need to learn to give and take to be productive members of society and to be happy in life. Because a lot of the satisfaction we get out of life is by giving and learning to sacrifice for others and bringing joy to other people. And so we want to allow our children to learn how to do that in the midst of even the struggles that they have to live with.
See, I think it's helpful. Just the whole idea of leading and following is an interesting one that we see in the dynamic of single-parent families. How does it take place? Well, there are three parts of that. You be the leader game. The third part is to just sit down and talk about it together. Debrief about it afterwards. You want to ask questions like, what do you like about following? What's easy about leading? Or what's difficult about following? What's difficult about leading and why? Would you rather lead or would you rather follow? You know, and you're going to talk about the game in particular, whatever you just did, but you're also going to talk about it on a broader scale about life. You know, do you like leading or do you like following, and why? And let's talk about that, because we often find ourselves in both situations, and children need to learn how to lead, and some of them need to learn how to follow. Some of you are raising strong-willed children. Those are typical leaders. They know where they want to go, and they know how to get there, and often you feel like they're coming through you to get there. Leaders are hard to raise, and one of the things we want to teach our leaders to do is to follow. They've got to learn how to lead, yes, and lead in a wise way, but they also have to learn how to follow. So we're going to emphasize both of those things. Developing teamwork is essential for strong relationships and to keep the family machine running smoothly.
After doing this activity, one family, a single mom with her two young children, were playing the leader-follower game. And afterwards, they spent time talking about it and debriefing what they had learned through the experience and just understanding what was going on. The mom shared that she really, in life, often has to lead, even though she would prefer to follow. She likes being a follower, but being a single parent, she has to do a lot of leading. And the daughter made the observation that being the leader is difficult when followers are complaining or they're arguing about it. So even the young girl was able to see that through this game. The mom also shared that at work, she often has to be a follower, and there's good ways to do that and unhelpful ways to do that, and that she's looking for ways to be a supportive follower, helping other people accomplish their goals. So through this discussion they had after the game, they were able to make some observations about leading and following, and those observations then affected how they continue to live life in the next few weeks. So it can be, playing a game like this can be a way of bringing out some concept about leading and following that you're not just teaching your children verbally, but you're kind of acting it out and helping them to come to some of the observations and conclusions themselves. This whole sense of teamwork, though, is an important one to focus on. And I just want to mention a couple other things as we're winding down on this teamwork idea. It's just all the forces that tug our families apart. If we're not careful, our children can be pulled in so many different directions that we don't spend much time with them. And there's so many options for them, TV and computers and school and work, a host of other distractions that can be pulling our families apart. And so we need to be real intentional about keeping our family together, fostering that sense of unity, fostering a sense of teamwork so that we're enjoying time together, not just getting the work done when we have to be together, but enjoying family life together and enjoying that sense of teamwork in our families.
So we focus primarily here on this first principle, just having a commitment, a strong commitment, looking for ways to do that. We've touched a little bit on the balance of power issue, but focused on that one first success principle. Now let's move on to three more success principles that all fall under this category of communication. Let's talk about three of them. One, communicate openly. Number two, be honest and real. And number three, share emotions. All of which fall under this whole idea of being able to communicate effectively. That's what we want for our children. In healthy families, communication is direct, open, honest, thoughtful, and loving. In unhealthy families, communication is characterized by criticism, cynicism, sarcasm, hurtful words, and put-downs.
God delights in truthful and honest communication, balanced with love and kindness. Believers are encouraged to correct and challenge each other, but also to listen and care for each other. The tongue can easily cause disharmony in relationships, but can also bring care and healing into relationships. So we need to be careful about how we talk, the communication that we get involved with. Is it helpful? Is it building people up? Or is it just negative and difficult? We want to be careful about the words we use, the way we talk, who we talk to, what we talk about, all those things that we can be intentional about to bring healing and health into our families rather than just damaging relationships.
Children about the age of 2 years old learn how to talk, but that's different than communicating. Good communication requires that people learn how to listen. They learn how to talk. They know when to talk, when to listen. That's a lot of skills that are necessary. Picking up on social cues that are going on. Does your child know when to be quiet? That's as much a part of the communication process as talking. We need to learn all of those things. And, you know, the goal here as we're trying to communicate with our children is not always to agree. We often have to say to our children, I believe, you know, we may not agree on this point, but at least we can understand each other. Now, a parent may have to make a final decision at some point in what's going on, and that's okay. That's the job of a parent. But still, we can have that understanding. So agreement isn't always the goal, but understanding is a primary goal.
Although good communication has a lot of benefits, it also requires a lot of hard work, a lot of perseverance. And I think if we're not working at good communication, unfortunately, unhelpful communication seeps into our relationships and certainly into our families. And in our families, we think we can kind of let down, we've got to relax, we've kind of been on duty all day or something. We get home with our families, often we're not paying attention to the kind of communication that's happening. And so we want to now take some focus and look at the communication that's happening and making sure it's helpful. I think too often, sarcasm, hurtful joking, criticism, angry exchanges are the kind of communication that we have. And that's painful. It's hurtful in our families and in our relationships. It's damaging. And we don't want to allow that. We need to take some attention to it and really look at what's going on. Often there's hidden messages in the communication in our families. Teasing, sarcasm, dirty looks, angry tone of voice are things that we're not being outright with those negatives, but they're happening. Walking away, overpowering with anger, or even whining and complaining are underhanded ways to gain control in a family by sending a message without taking responsibility for it. Family members communicate dishonoring messages nonverbally. So we're not just talking about words even, but it's the nonverbal communication. And what are we saying to one another in the family? Communication is like sitting at a table passing messages to one another. Everybody has paper and a pencil, and you can write a message down and pass it to someone over the table. But some kinds of communication, like sarcasm, are also, there's a hidden message there. So you're passing a message over the table that's written down, but you're passing another message under the table by your tone of voice or your body language. With sarcasm, your tone of voice is inconsistent with the message that you're passing. So there's some hidden messages there. There's some underhanded ways of communicating. We're not just talking about words here.
So a family that has a lot of negative habits in communication might sound something like this.
Oh, yeah, you're too tired to take out the trash. Just wait till the phone rings. We'll see who's tired.
Hey, I worked hard today. I didn't sit around like some people I know.
Sit around? Boy, you know, you're so smart with a computer, but how come you can't figure out how to make the vacuum cleaner work?
You want me to vacuum? What do you think I am, a maid? Don't answer that.
You know, a wise parent will hear the sarcasm in the family and point it out. Try and draw out that hidden message rather than just allowing it to go on. Sometimes those messages are just under the surface. If we can draw them to the surface, start asking questions about them. I think sometimes the sarcasm or the nonverbal communication happens without people even realizing it. So at first we want to just be pointing it out. You may ask questions like, you know, the way you said that communicates that you're angry. Is that true? Or you're saying right, like you agree with me, but your tone of voice says you don't agree with me. Tell me what's going on there. And just use questions to draw out our family members.
We find that teenagers often get trapped in a cycle of sarcasm continually. I mean, almost everything they say has to do with sarcasm. And so we really want to help them change that around. So that previous conversation in a family that has more healthy communication might sound like this.
I realize you're tired, Kevin, but I really need you to take the trash out.
Hey, I worked hard today. Could I rest for a while before I do some work?
All right, but I really need some help around here. I also need you to vacuum the living room and dining room.
You know, I had planned to do some things this afternoon. I'm willing to help around, but could I just have some time to work on my things for, say, a half hour for a little while?
Okay, why don't you rest for a while and then do some jobs for me? I really appreciate your help.
Okay.
Thanks.
You want to address other indirect forms of communication. You might say to your teenager, hey, look, when I'm talking to you and you walk away in the middle of a conversation, it gives me the feeling that, or the sense that, you don't think I'm worth the time spent to try to work this through. Is that what you're saying? You know, just trying to raise the awareness level of the message that's being communicated in those unhealthy forms of communications. Also, parents and children sometimes jump to conclusions about what somebody's going to say before the person even gets to say it. We need to be careful to listen. We need to learn how to communicate effectively. And really, you need to become an expert at communication and understand what it is so that you can help your children learn how to communicate effectively, because they're going to carry that down into other relationships as they continue on.
In one counseling situation, young girl Becky, 17 years old, said this to her mother, "I think I'm old enough to make some of these decisions for myself. I can decide what's good for me." Now her mother said, "So what you're saying is you don't need me anymore." You see, that's a different message there. Becky now was insightful enough to say, "Well, is that what you heard me say? What I'm saying is I just want you to trust me and allow me to make some decisions for myself." Those kind of conversations can quickly turn into conflict in many homes. But we want to be insightful enough, as this young girl Becky was, to draw out the issues a little more, to ask questions. What are you hearing me say? Is that really, double check the message that we're receiving. What Becky realized, what her mom was having a hard time letting go of her little girl. And so we want to draw those issues out. Sometimes our children are insightful enough, but often it's going to be us as parents to see what's going on there and ask some more questions to draw that out, so that we're not just taking that communication at face value, but we're really double checking the message that we're getting and talking about it a little bit more carefully. Let's move on to another area within this section of communication, and that's sharing emotions. Sharing emotions is another success principle that falls under the subject of communication. Emotional openness allows a family to go beyond that superficial sharing to a level where we can really care for one another, understand what's going on, share our feelings, feel accepted and honored. Many families only feel comfortable sharing two emotions, anger and frustration. But we believe it's helpful to share other emotions in the family too, fear, joy, peace. There's a lot of things that we can be sharing with one another in the family. We need to be comfortable doing that and open things up so our children will do that as well. And so you may, as a mom or a dad, be able to ask questions that draw out the feelings of your children a little bit. Things like statements that start with, "I feel," sharing your own emotions, or statements that say, "It looks like you're feeling," you know, fill in the blank, and draw out some conversation from your children about the feelings and just let them know that it's okay to be talking about these things. You know, we're not going to always be critical of what our children are feeling, but just to listen to the, and sometimes they don't even know what they're feeling. And we want to help them name that emotion then and draw it out and say, it's okay to talk about these things.
One dad was feeling like his children had some emotions that they weren't dealing with. You know, just young kids, 4 and 6 years old. And so he was talking to us about how he was using mirroring. A great idea. The idea is you're reflecting the emotions with a mirror. And at first that can sound kind of mechanical if you're just repeating the words back to a child. But if you can really get into their emotional shoes and express what they're feeling, it can be very helpful for children, because in that case, they're able to listen to themselves, they're able to see their own emotions, and then be able to accept them and be able to even use their emotions as they get to be a little older. So there are a number of ways that you can try to connect with your children. This idea of mirroring was a helpful one. It takes practice. It's not easy to be able to mirror emotions to someone. At first it seems very rote and even put on. But what you want to do is look for ways to help children understand emotions, and many of them don't understand them. Many of our children don't understand them at all. And so being able to mirror to our kids can be a great technique to help them see what's going on inside of them.
Feeling comfortable sharing emotions is important for our children. I think sometimes as parents we need to begin to feel comfortable sharing emotions first before we can encourage that in our children. And we need to know what those emotions are and what we're feeling, and just be transparent with that before our children will feel comfortable with that. But it's just an important thing to be thinking about, because it is a sign of a healthy family that we're able to be relaxed enough to be emotional with one another and accept each other in that emotional state and say, you know, that's okay to be feeling that. Another principle that falls into this area of communication has to do with being honest and real. Again, it's a little bit different than emotions, but it's dealing with weaknesses. Can we be honest about our own weaknesses, our own struggles? Or is that seen as being too weak? We don't want that to be the case. In a healthy, a strong family, we want to be vulnerable, in a sense, and feel free to be, it's okay to share some weaknesses. And I think as parents, we want to even model that for our kids. If we're not able to be honest about our weaknesses, then we're really missing out on something. That sense of honesty, we're not being real with one another then, because we all have weaknesses. So we want to be able to apologize to our children, to share some weaknesses with them, and then encourage that in them as well. One dad shared this story. He was feeling like he was being harsh with his children a lot. He was having a problem communicating. And so when they sat down one evening for a family meeting, and dad shared this with him. He said, you know, I realize I'm having a problem with communication. I'm often harsh with you and hurtful. And I just want to confess that to you and ask for your help. And then he went around the circle and asked each one of his children how he had hurt them with his harshness in his way of communicating. And that was just an amazing thing to be able to open up like that in his family. And it really touched each of the children. And they each did share situations because they had that open door then. They shared how he had been hurtful to them. And then the dad said, you know, I'd like you to help me with this. And I'd like you to point out to me when I'm being harsh or hurtful because I really want to work on it. That just did a tremendous amount for that family, drawing them together, for the dad to be vulnerable like that, help the whole family to recognize it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to have struggles. We can work together at this and be vulnerable together.
You know, as a single parent, you have a challenge. You have to decide how much of your life you're going to share with your child. And we're just suggesting here that part of the growth of your child is going to be the transparency that you have with them. That doesn't mean we share everything with our children. That would be foolish. But as your child grows, you want to be sharing some significant things that you're trying to work on in your own life. You're trying to be transparent. You're trying to be real. You're trying to help your child understand what you're going through in at least partially so that they can see you being real. Now, some people believe that they're stuck. They're never going to be able to change. And, you know, one of the greatest things that can happen is for you to have kids, because kids challenge us in ways we never imagined. I used to think I was a pretty righteous person. Then I had kids. They have revealed a lot of my own selfishness, a lot of my own anger. And it's because of children that we grow in so many character qualities. So I would just suggest that as your children helping you grow, that you reveal some of those things to them and just share those. Being honest and real with your children can be a real asset within certain boundaries. Obviously, we don't share with them some things, but as you do choose what you're going to share, choose some of the things that are some of your weaknesses, things you're trying to work on, ways you're trying to grow.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over and rewind it to hear the rest of this session.
As we conclude this whole focus on communication, our second main ingredient that we're talking about, I just want to share with you the tennis ball game, because this is a game that we can use with families to help children understand communication a little more, the give and take of communication, the talking and the listening and how it goes back and forth. The tennis ball game is simply this. If you've got a group of people, it can be your family or even other children involved if you want to do that, but you stand in or sit in a circle, and the only person allowed to talk is the one holding the tennis ball. And so that person can tell a story or ask a question or whatever. Then they put the tennis ball down. And the next person who wants to talk has to pick up the tennis ball. See, the game gives children a picture of how communication is give and take. Sometimes we're talking, sometimes we're listening. It gives a picture of who's doing most of the talking. If you want to interrupt, that means you have to grab that tennis ball. It's just a physical way of showing what children often do in conversations. If we're interrupting or jumping in, that means we're grabbing from someone else. And so we want children to see that. In my family, one afternoon, we were sitting around the table just having an informal discussion. The kids were telling some stories. And I realized that one of the children at the table, was getting cut off a lot, often being interrupted. But another one was dominating and kept putting in their 2 cents worth. And so I said, oh, this is a good time for the tennis ball game. I could see it happening, but I'm sure they couldn't see it happening. So I wanted to give them the picture. Of course, we didn't have a tennis ball close by, but on the counter I had a bowl of tomatoes. So I took the tomato and I explained the tennis ball game. And I said, we're going to talk, and you can only talk if you're holding the tomato. And so I handed the tomato to the less dominant child so that he could finish his story. Well, the child who was more dominant just couldn't stand it anymore, and he went and grabbed another tomato. But it just gave a picture of how often we want to talk, and it's not our turn. We need to just listen. And who's doing most of the talking? And it's just a fun game that we play with children sometimes.
If you want to look for ways to try to enhance communication in your family. All right, let's move from the whole communication umbrella to a third umbrella here we'll call conflict management. And under that, we're going to look at 3 success principles. We're going to look at tolerance, overlooking weaknesses. Secondly, we're going to look at how we address conflict directly. And thirdly, we're going to talk about forgiving. All 3 success principles in a family. And so they fall under this idea of dealing with conflict. In healthy single-parent families, when conflict occurs, individuals talk about the problem, bringing resolution and reconciliation. In unhealthy families, conflict leads individuals to gossip or vent anger at each other and then move on without seeking resolution.
As we deal with this whole area of conflict, one of the first things we need to be looking at is, what's the level of tolerance in our families? Are we always critical? Are we always jumping on one another? Are we able to overlook some weaknesses and just be tolerant of the growth process that each person is in? It's important to develop tolerance in ourselves as well as in our children. Now, a couple weeks ago, we talked about forgiveness. It's important that when we come to this whole area of conflict, because we want to be quick to forgive. We want to have an attitude of forgiveness in our families. Not just forgiveness for the big pain and hurt, but the day-to-day forgiveness, the pet peeves, the irritations. We want to have an attitude of forgiveness in our families. And last time we talked about teamwork, which also just pulls into this whole sense of overlooking weaknesses. We're together, we're all growing, we're at different stages of the growth process. We need to be tolerant of one another and able to a certain extent to overlook weaknesses and be able to move on with an attitude of love.
Pet peeves are a great way to talk about this with family members. Pet peeves are things like, well, we talk to our kids, what are pet peeves for you? And one of the boys might say, I hate it when she does this. What are some pet peeves that children have in families? What are they? Can you think of any? What are some pet peeves you have about kids?
When they...
What?
Toothpaste cap.
Okay, not putting the toothpaste cap on. Leaving the toilet seat up or down. What else?
Empty toilet paper rolls.
Put your shoes away. Okay, those are pet peeves. Now, what we can do is help our children see those, because our children have them too, especially children who are easily irritated with others. And then we have to decide, is this one of those things we want to let go, or is this one of those things we want to work on in our family relationship? As parents, you have a lot of opportunities to point out things that are wrong with your children. Lots of opportunities. In fact, some parents think that's their job, to always point out when a child has done something wrong. But I would suggest that the parent who's always communicating that a child's done something wrong becomes a critical parent. And so we want to look for ways to help our children understand what tolerance is all about, and sometimes that starts with mom or dad.
Sometimes we need to give kids the freedom to just be kids. And they might be a little more silly than what we would like, or they might be childish, but we want to give them some freedom. We want to be tolerant of their immaturity or their silliness at times. That doesn't mean overlook disobedience or defiance or disrespect. Those things we're not going to overlook and just let them go, because those things just get worse. But sometimes it's just foolishness on the child's part that's just because they're a kid, and we want to be able to overlook those things and be a little bit more tolerant. Children also need to learn to be tolerant. We want to model that, but we want to encourage our children to be tolerant, because often children are pointing out the weaknesses in each other. They want to make sure that everybody sees, you know, my brother's problem. And so things like, you know, Mom, Michael's got jam all over his shirt. Or Mom, tell Taylor to stop singing that song. Dad, why is Betsy always on the phone? You know, continually drawing attention to another child's weaknesses. But we think that the person who is always calling attention to someone else's weaknesses really says more about that person than the other person. And we want to help our children to learn patience and tolerance with one another, to be able to overlook some of the weaknesses and give each other room to grow and to learn and to just, you know, live through life without always being picked on.
Now, if you find yourself being the critical parent all the time and you want to work on this, one dad suggested this idea. I don't know how he did it, but he said this. I practiced a discipline of silence for a time, for a day, or might it be even for a week, that the discipline of not criticizing, that everything that's said in that period of time would be positive, not negative. That would be a real challenge. But the idea here is that you try to find out how often do I try to say something negative? And if you catch yourself every time for a period of time, instead only say positive things and try to motivate children in a positive way, it becomes a great exercise, at least, in trying to see how many times you are critical and ways to change our critical nature into something that's positive.
I'm going to just be watching our own communication. What are the things we're saying before we even point them out in our kids? Tattling, though, is another area where children are often pointing out weaknesses in others rather than overlooking or tolerating. They're looking, just looking for someone to do something wrong so they can point it out to mom or dad. And we call that tattling. It's one way that children bring problems to their parents. Now, we want to teach children about this idea of tattling because sometimes it's right for them to bring an offense to the parent. They need to do that. And so we want to teach children what offenses they should report, which ones they should try and fix themselves, which ones they should overlook, and help them understand that. And if an irritation can't be overlooked, if it's not something they're supposed to ignore, they can't work it out, then bringing it to the parent is the right thing for them to do. It's following a biblical model of conflict management. If two people can't work something out together, they get a third person involved. So that's the right thing to do, but not in the sense of always trying to get the other person in trouble. But the goal is to, the motivation needs to be making the situation better.
Children often do annoying things. They may be tapping their foot or singing a song or making noises with their mouth. I mean, those things are annoying. They are irritating. They're not intentionally trying to hurt anybody. They're just being annoying. And we want to help our children to deal with annoying behavior. I don't want to say we always let it go, because we talk and try to help develop plans for these children to become more sensitive, to become more aware of what's going on, to have more self-control, so they don't have to be as annoying. But there are times when we need to teach our children to ask the question, am I being easily provoked? Do I need to develop patience? You know, sometimes our children are so quick to jump on somebody else, and they really could use this opportunity to develop some patience. So we're working both sides of the coin here. One of the things we're trying to suggest here is we're trying to work on conflict management. It's one of the things that would benefit our children is to become more tolerant of some of the things that they often get angry about.
So we're talking about this area of conflict, and first we've said that tolerance is important, overlooking weaknesses, but of course that's not the whole story. We also need to address conflict, and we need to do it in our families in a way that's helpful and constructive. We need to be able to deal with conflict, and so we want to look for some guidelines to handle conflict in a way that's helpful and healthy. God gives us some guidelines for dealing with conflict in the Bible. If two people can't solve a problem, they get a third person involved to help solve the problem. That's a biblical model for conflict management. Also, individuals should evaluate themselves first before criticizing someone else. We're not always looking at the problems in others, but first we have to look at ourselves. What am I doing? How am I responding? And then maybe we can help someone else. Because the temptation to criticize leaders is great, the Scriptures places limits on that criticism. You see, God wants His family to be able to handle conflict, to resolve it quickly, to do it in a way that's helpful for all members involved, and to move through to resolution.
All right, so imagine yourself. You see some conflict going on, or you're about to engage in some conflict. How do you deal with it? Some parents deal with it with power, put downs. They just kind of overpower the situation in order to get the job done. What we have to think here is, you may be right, all right, but right is not good enough. You may see a child doing the wrong thing, but the question is not, am I right, but how am I going to help that child change the heart, not just their behavior? So I want to be able to come into this situation, whatever it is, in a way that's going to address the conflict, not just to get rid of it, but to help children change and learn from it. So wisdom is so important as we're trying to address conflict, knowing how to come into a situation, what to do. Ask yourself a question before you engage. I mean, sometimes what happens is we see something, it makes us angry, we step in and take care of it, and we walk away saying, what do we teach anybody in that situation? Are we just blowing somebody off? We've got to step in with wisdom. And often, all you have to do is ask that extra question before you step in the situation, and you'll see some real positive results because of the way you come into that.
Conflict is one of those areas where, as single parents, you can do a lot of teaching with your children. Conflict situations are going to come up. So we don't want to just deal with a conflict, but we want to use that as an opportunity to teach children something about conflict management and how to handle it. So we're going to share with you just three key principles just to keep in mind when you're dealing with conflict. The first one is to practice listening. Too often people prefer to talk, and even while the other person is talking, instead of listening, we're formulating our next words. How am I going to come back at them? And we're not really listening. So the first principle is to learn to listen, to teach children to listen, to take time to hear what's going on. Listening often keeps the intensity of the conflict from escalating, if we're listening and really addressing the issues as we talk. Secondly, to validate what the other person is saying. Often others have a good point, a valuable idea. But in an attempt to defend or justify ourselves, we're not even going to take that into account. We're not going to listen to it. We want to teach children not only to listen, but to affirm the other person as well. So instead of just saying, yeah, but, or I know, but, teach them to say, oh, that's a good idea. I understand what you're saying. And then launch into their idea. So just teaching some different words in the communication process to validate the other person, to restate their side maybe before you say your own, can help in that conflict from not getting too intense. And thirdly, to focus on resolving conflict rather than winning arguments. It's not just about getting your own way here, but it's about the relationship. Gracious conflict resolution demonstrates honor by valuing people more than problems. The process is more important than the results. The end result is something we're going to come to together, but we're going to preserve relationship through the whole process.
This is another key principle here. Process is more important than issue. Some parents get hung up on the issue and then things escalate over and over again, and it would really be good to leave the issue and talk about how we're relating, the process, about how we're talking together. The way you're raising your voice here, that's not good. Let's stop for a minute and settle down, and we'll talk about this issue in a moment. You see, the person's left the issue, start talking about the process. Or, I'd like to talk to you about taking you over to the store, but I'm uncomfortable about the way that you yelled at me a minute ago. We need to talk about that first before I can talk about the issue. We have to talk about the process. Process is very important, and you can do that with family meetings. Sometimes it's helpful to pull everybody together and say, okay, there's some concerns you want to talk about, or some things that you want to talk about that are positive. And so children have an opportunity to express concerns that they have. And even in the group, we can talk about how to engage more carefully in the way that we relate to each other. So we want to look for good conflict resolution skills. We can teach that in family meetings. We can teach that in individual relationships. But as we're working with our children, we want to work on the process, not just the issue.
Another success principle that falls under the category of conflict management is forgiveness. And again, we've talked about forgiveness before, but it's so important in our families to have an attitude of forgiveness, to be in the habit of forgiving, to being gracious with one another. There's conflict. It's going to happen. Conflict is inevitable. But we want to be able to move on from that, offering forgiveness and then going on rather than harboring bitterness or keeping an account of wrongs and just keeping it all tied up there. I'm not going to let this go because I may need this again in the next argument. We want to be able to let it go, offer forgiveness, and move on in relationships looking for reconciliation.
A family's ability to deal with forgiveness or offer forgiveness is a good barometer of their ability to deal with conflict. So just ask yourself that. Do people in your family say, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? Or, yes, I forgive you. It's a good barometer of how you're dealing with conflict in your family. Some families just try to forget the problem or move on or try to cover it over with fun or just ignore it. Here's a story written by one mom, Elizabeth Corcoran, that reads this way. I did it again. I swear I can't seem to get this mothering thing down. Sarah, my 4-year-old, was simply in my way and as I was trying to walk across the kitchen. This wasn't deliberate disobedience on her part, by any means. And I yelled at her. The feeling in the pit of my stomach when I do that, oh, it just makes me sick. Okay, so I have a few options right at that moment. Number one, pretend I didn't just snap at her for no reason and move on with life. Number two, start beating myself up for being a lousy mother. Or number three, fix it. Well, if I did the pretending game, then I would have taught my daughter a couple of things. One, you can be mean to someone and not have to apologize for it. And I would have been basically saying to her that she wasn't a very important person. Neither of those lessons were ones I wanted to pass on. I could have gone the guilt route, heaping a weight on my shoulders that left me feeling unfit to mother Sarah, carrying around blame much longer than necessary and therefore turning my day into a waste of time. Or I could have taken care of the situation. And thankfully, at that moment, I chose this high road. Unfortunately, I don't always. I went to Sarah, knelt down, looked her in the eyes and said, "I'm sorry for yelling at you and hurting your feelings. Mommy was wrong." She said, "I forgive you, Mommy. I was frustrated with you, too." Ah, the honesty of a child. Then I took it a step further. I then asked God for His forgiveness and asked Him for patience and help the next time I was about to lose it. I felt better almost instantly after taking care of it that way. Confess, repent, move on. The lesson I taught my daughter in that moment was that, yes, Mommy is a human and will mess up a lot. However, it can be made right when you choose to, and you can be granted forgiveness and a clean slate. And I was reminded that my daughter and my God are very forgiving.
You know, in healthy single-parent families, unresolved conflict is uncomfortable. We want to get back to the person that we've offended, maybe, or the person who's offended us, and make it right. We want to bring things to resolution. Now, with children, we're not always going to force them to say, "I'm sorry," necessarily, because sorrow is an emotion. And we can't force sorrow. A child may not feel sorry for what they did. But what we suggest that you encourage children to say is, "I was wrong, would you forgive me?" Because that's an important thing for children to be able to say, "I was wrong, would you forgive me?" And maybe that sorrow will come, but it's not necessary for the process of forgiveness. And so we want to encourage children to be in the habit of doing that. And as parents, we need to be in the habit of asking for and giving forgiveness. It's a process that we all need to be growing in, and we want to model it for our children as well. So we don't want to be afraid to admit it. When we've been wrong, if we can apologize to our children, ask for their forgiveness, I think then they'll be more quick also to be able to ask for and give forgiveness as they're growing up.
Well, that's a lot. We've looked at 7 or 8 of those list of 10 things on your list. And, you know, how do you feel after you hear all those things? I mean, some people feel overwhelmed. I've got a lot to do. Others feel, well, you know, I feel pretty good. There's a lot of good things I'm doing. Others feel like, you know I'm not doing a lot of things the way I need to, but I know where I need to go. And that's an encouragement for them. So what we want you to do is look for one of those that you're doing well and just mark that and enjoy it. And then look for one that maybe you need to work on and just start working on one of them. Don't try to work on all 10 of them at the same time. Work on one of them and try to start practicing that in your family as far as it depends on you. You know, just trying to implement that particular area and see some growth happen in your family relationships.
As we've been working with families over the years, an interesting thing we've discovered is that we want our children to change. Parents often need to change first. And the way we respond to our children is often what develops the patterns in them. Not that it's our fault, but we've run into patterns and we respond one way and they respond and it becomes a cycle. And so as parents, we can make some changes and then our children will be forced to change because things are not going along the regular patterns. They're going to have to do something different. So if you're trying to stop whining, the way you respond to whining now needs to change and then they're going to have to do something different. Or if your children are bickering, you have to decide, well, you're going to respond to the bickering differently, and then they also are going to need to change. And so we just suggest that you spend some time looking at your family, thinking about the different relationships, as we talked about last week, and looking at them again in these different areas. And what are the strengths that you can enjoy, and what are some areas that you want to be working on? Seeing things a little bit differently, making just some minor adjustments maybe, and we believe that you'll see some amazing results in your children as you begin to make those changes.
The primary message we're trying to communicate to you in this session is that your family can be successful now. There are some single parents who develop the mentality that says, "I can't be happy and our family can't be successful until I find another mate or until something else happens." That is not true. You can be successful today. There are advantages to being married. There are advantages to being single. What we're suggesting is you take the advantages of being a single parent and develop those, use them to your advantage, and grow your family unit in a successful way. A group of single parents got together and made a list of all the benefits of being a single parent. Here are some of them they suggested. 1, the remote control will be yours and only yours, and it has an off button. 2, you can now develop with each of your children the kind of relationship that feels right to you. 3, you can count on the toilet seat always being up or down, depending on the case. You only have to make half the bed. You can rip out anything you want from the newspaper. Your every utterance will no longer be trumped with a better idea unless you have teenagers, and they won't stay that way forever. You don't have to fight with someone over the right way to discipline or reward your child. You can concentrate on your relationship with your children without the conflict generated sometimes by a spouse. Single parenthood is not a deficit. It's an opportunity to actively create extended family units that empower children to be successful. And it begins with you. And we spend most of our time talking about you and your relationship with your children. But I want you to think about your relationship for a moment with your Heavenly Father. God is your single parent. He loves you. He cares for you. And He wants to have a close relationship with you. So the most important parenting tip that we could give you in the course of this whole class is to find Jesus Christ, develop that relationship with God, and develop a closeness with your Heavenly Father. Parenting is a very difficult challenge. You need all the strength and the wisdom that you could get, and that comes through a relationship with God. God wants to have that close relationship with you. It's a matter of admitting the fact that you need His forgiveness and being able to accept Him and become part of His family.
This concludes this series. We trust that you have benefited from the Ministry of Effective Parenting. Together, Scott Taransky and Joanne Miller have written books on the family. You will find them to be practical resources presented in an easy-to-read style. Effective Parenting is a nonprofit ministry committed to strengthening the family through teaching, counseling, and producing materials for parents and children. Our goal is to build families where God is honored and where parents are finding fulfillment in their roles as mom and dad. To learn more about the Ministry of Effective Parenting, call 609-771-8002 or 1-800-771-8334. Books and tapes are available, as well as information about upcoming conferences. Thank you for participating with us in this series. We pray that God will bless your family as you apply the things taught in these sessions.